Welcome to the Breakdown to Breakthrough podcast. My name is Lisa A. Romano. I am a life coach, best-selling author, YouTube vlogger, meditation teacher, and expert in the field of codependency and narcissistic abuse. I am a believer in the power of an organized mind. My aim is to help people learn what it means to live above the veil of consciousness rather than living a reactive life. May your heart feel blessed, your mind feel expanded, and your spirit find hope as you spend time with me here at the Breakdown to Breakthrough podcast. So today, we're going to be talking about why so many of us might have a difficult time identifying our emotions. So today we're talking about a topic that can be pretty confusing for a lot of people. We are talking about what it is when we have a difficult time identifying our emotions. I remember when I was in therapy with finally a therapist that I believe changed my life, and he helped me recognize that thinking and feeling were not the same things. And up until that point in my life, I thought that I had a pretty good handle on what I was feeling, but it wasn't the case. And it took me a while to sort that out. What was true was that I was very aware of when I was angry. I was very aware of when I felt happy, but there was this whole rainbow of colors between being happy and angry that I was having a difficult time accessing, and I didn't even know it. And so one of the issues that adult children of alcoholics have, a huge issue that codependents have, because oftentimes if you are the adult child of an alcoholic, you have an issue with relating to people in a healthy way, and oftentimes you end up being a caretaker, you end up being a rescuer, because as a child, it wasn't safe for you to need, it wasn't safe for you to want. What was safe was to cater to other people. What was safe was to fawn and to seek approval. That became a way of life. If you are codependent, you are someone who is in a relationship that can be defined as dependent in an unhealthy way. So you might depend on your partner for a sense of self. And you might seek this sense of self by trying to be good enough for this partner. So you anticipate their needs. You're very externally focused. And those of us who struggle to be able to identify our emotions, and some people will call this alexithymia, or depending on how you pronounce it, alexithymia, alexithymia. Some people pronounce it differently, but I pronounce it alexithymia. And this is defined as a person who has difficulty identifying and expressing emotions. This is not a mental health condition. This is something that you experience. You say, well, yeah, I'm having a difficult time identifying my emotions. And oftentimes we don't even know that this is the case. So it's important to recognize that when we feel something emotionally, there's often a physiological response to that feeling. When you're angry, maybe your heart races, maybe your ears get hot. When you get happy, maybe your heart races even more, or maybe you get butterflies in your stomach. Maybe you get even a little bit lightheaded, depending on how happy you are and exuberant you are. You might feel like your skin is bubbling over, you're just so excited. But it's hard when you have a difficult time identifying your emotions. It's hard to connect to the body. And this is important for us to recognize because, again, you can't fix a hole in the wall that you can't see. So I think healing and recovery is also a big part of what we need to do is first acknowledging what's wrong. Once I identify what's wrong, then I can set out to create goals that allow me to fix it or get better. So why would you or I or someone we know, what would be some of the causes of being unable to identify our emotions? Well, if you come from a dysfunctional home, it might be very difficult for you to identify your feelings because the ability to identify feelings needs to be modeled. So if you came from a home where your parents did not model a vast array of emotions, then you don't have a model for how to identify your emotions. If your parents aren't using language like that was blissful, that was joyous, that was fun, that was exciting, that was exhilarating, that was depressing, that was sad, That was disappointing. That was surprising. That was amazing. That was tantalizing. That was frightening. Wasn't that frightening? Or how did you feel about that? If you don't have parents who are labeling emotions, if they aren't asking you about what your emotions are, then you are not accustomed to looking within and developing this deep level of introspection. One of the most important things that I think a parent can do is ask their child, how do you feel? How do you know that you feel that way? What's happening in your body when you say that you're sad or you're lonely or you're depressed or you're angry or you're happy? How do you know that you're happy? When I ask my little five-year-old niece, how do I know she's happy? She says, my belly feels good. Okay, that's how she knows her belly feels good. Or she says her heart feels full. This is amazing. This means that she is connecting a feeling to her body, which is really, really healthy. And we look forward to her being able to explore an array of emotions because we want to be able to explore our emotions because we identify with our emotions. And when we meet other people, we build bonds with them by sharing our emotions with other people. So when parents don't identify their emotions and you have like this very flat experience with your parents and they're very shut down, or if your parents are highly emotionally immature and they respond inappropriately to stress, maybe they rage, they anger, they slam things. It's a very dysfunctional experience for you. It's a very toxic experience for you as a child to observe a parent who cannot emotionally regulate. Then the only emotion that you may be able to identify is anger. So that's another reason why it might be difficult for you to identify an array of emotions. So another reason that it might be difficult to express our emotions is that over time, we learn to shut down. It's just not safe to express our emotions. In my house, we were mocked and we were laughed at if we dared to ever present as children who had a need or a want or who were unhappy. We knew that it was our job to smile on cue and to bob our head as if we were happy. We knew that our parents wanted us to stuff our emotions, and so that's what we did. And you stuff your emotions, you basically detach from your emotions. You learn to ignore the pain in your stomach. You learn to ignore the panic that you feel. You learn to pretend that everything's okay, even when it's not. So that might be a reason. Another issue that we have, especially if we come from if we are adult children of alcoholics, is that we're not expressing like people who don't have this issue. And so we are very externally focused. So we are very attuned to when other people are feeling something. And that is our cue to take care of them. So maybe someone died in our family and we don't know how to grieve it. We don't know how to access it. We might think there's something wrong if we express an emotion. So we have this belief that is associated with expressing emotions that is fear-based. And so below the veil of consciousness, we're just by default now just like shunting our emotions. We're just turned off from them. And we go into making everybody else comfortable with their grief. We can be there for other people, but we can't get in touch with our own grief. We don't know how to say, this is what I'm feeling. And the next step is, this is what I'm feeling and I need support here. So this gets all wonky inside the adult child who has been raised by a narcissistic parent and or an alcoholic or someone who is emotionally immature. It gets all wonky because if I can't identify when I'm sad or when I'm grieving, then I can't heal it. I can't express it. I can't share myself with another person. I'm afraid to share myself with another person. So this creates intimacy problems, the inability to express myself or identify an emotion. And I end up then caretaking and rescuing everyone else's emotions. And I basically captain this storm without even looking at myself. Another reason that we have an issue with identifying our emotions is that we allow ourselves to feel anger, but we can't allow ourselves to feel sadness. So anger becomes an emotion that we think is acceptable. Sadness is not an emotion that is acceptable. So in some cases, anger will hide our sadness. This is very, very, very common. We weren't allowed to be sad. We had to pretend that we were happy. We had to take care of our narcissistic mother's needs, or we had to cater to our narcissistic father. We had to cower around them when they were enraged or when they were drinking. We had to live in fear, or we lived in fear of severe betrayal, or we lived in fear of being mocked. We lived in fear of abandonment. So we don't know how to access the emotions that would make us feel more vulnerable. But what we do know how to do is take care of other people. That's what we know how to do. Another reason that we have a difficult time identifying with feelings is that we don't trust that what we feel is actually real. And so if I don't trust what's happening inside of me through parental gaslighting, for instance, or if my home was such a toxic place, and that's what happens in narcissistic families. Like when you have narcissistic parents, then it's like the children start to turn on one another, and the parents sometimes enjoy it. It becomes the norm. So you don't feel safe. So there's no way for you to share your true emotions with your sibling, because your sibling might go back and say something to your narcissistic mother. And so you keep that inside of you. You don't dare share that. It's seen as a weakness. And so this becomes part of your download. This becomes part of your programming. This is part of the trauma, is having the fear of being vulnerable with a sibling and being vulnerable around your parents. I mean, how backwards is that? These are the people who are supposed to love you and have compassion for you and take care of you. And it is very, very destabilizing and dysregulating when you come into this world and you end up fearing the people who should be loving you. It's not natural. It's not organic. You have to live in a state of survival just to survive this madness. The problem is we can adapt to this level of dysfunction and not even know that that's what's happening. Sometimes when we think about a scapegoat child, who people say, well, why is that child so angry? Well, that child has been picked on and has been abused by every family member, and this child now is exhibiting signs of anger. When we look deeper, the anger isn't a feeling. The anger is a defense, because if I don't fight you back, you're going to destroy me. So it's not really a feeling. It's defensive. And we need to know that if we are the child, and I had a little chip on my shoulder. Well, my parents would have said she had a big chip on her shoulder. But that really wasn't the way that I felt. How I felt was sad. How I felt was lonely. How I felt was abandoned. How I felt was disillusioned. How I felt was bewildered. How I felt was despondent. The anger and the chip on my shoulder, that was my defense. That was my armor, because I just felt that if I dropped it, they would eat me alive. Like there would be nothing left of me. And so I think that those of us who struggle with anger, we might want to ask ourselves, is that really how I feel? Or is this my cover story? Is this anger protecting me from the fear of being engulfed by the feeling of invisibility, or the fear of exposing myself and having the people that I love the most humiliate me or hurt me or use it against me in some way? Something to think about. We oftentimes may also, those of us who can't figure out how we feel, we might resort to anger. And when we get all jumbled up and we start to feel emotional, but we can't sort the emotions out, it's so overwhelming, we might even push people away. And we're trying to distance ourselves from other people because we can't identify how we feel. We feel something and it can be overwhelming, but we can't put our finger on it. Now, remember, I can't identify my feelings if my parents haven't modeled that for me. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what it looks like to look within and say, I wonder what I feel. How does this feel? How do I feel? No one cared how you felt as a child. No one cared. And when you dared to express how you felt, you were mocked, or you were abandoned, or you were told that you shouldn't feel that way, or worse. So it wasn't safe to look within. We also have a difficult time identifying our emotions when we're stuck in survival, and we need to be hypervigilant in toxic families. I don't have time to look at my emotions and ask myself how I feel if every time I step out of the bedroom or the bathroom or I creep into the kitchen, someone's going to say something really nasty to me or attack me or abandon me or whatever. Like, it's not safe to look within. As a means of survival, hypervigilance is what keeps you safe. Monitoring someone's tone, monitoring the words that come out of their mouth, watching their body movements, trying to avoid being screamed at, yelled at, or whatever, right? So it's another reason, because we're hypervigilant, we're externally focused. So another thing that happens to us when it comes to emotions and when we come from a toxic family is that we, especially women, have this issue, and men too, I think, but I would tend to think that women have been conditioned to feel that it's wrong to get angry. And so we just don't feel anything. We are afraid also that if we get angry, we're going to lose it. Like, if I tap into my anger, there's like no off button. It's just going to be complete rage. And so many of us who have been taught that it's not good to look within, or it's bad to look within, or it's dangerous to look within, those of us who struggle with identifying how we feel, we have to really ask ourselves, do we have this belief running in the subconscious mind that's tied to the fear of getting angry and touching that anger? And if I am afraid of feeling that anger and getting in touch with that anger, why is that so? What am I afraid is going to happen if I tap into that anger? Am I afraid that I might do something I might regret? Am I afraid I won't be able to regulate the rage? Am I afraid I'm going to turn into my mother? Am I afraid I'm going to turn into my father? Am I afraid I won't be able to turn the rage off? Or am I afraid the anger will turn into rage? Because if that is operating below the veil of consciousness, we need to excavate that, and we need to pay attention to that, and we need to work in that realm. Because anger is sort of like this blanket emotion. It covers so many other emotions, like sadness, like loss, like grief, like the feeling of betrayal, disillusionment, all of it. Feeling like empty, feeling alone, feeling helpless, feeling unlucky, feeling despondent, all of these feelings, right? Sometimes anger just blankets it all over. And when we give ourselves permission to experiment with feeling more feelings, just labeling our emotions helps lessen the power that anger can have in our lives. We really want to move away from being afraid to feel anything, because our feelings are what makes us human. Thoughts make us human. And we have to learn to like get back in touch with how we feel. So I want to offer you some of the things that I offer my personal clients, and hope that if you're someone who struggles with how you're feeling, or if you identify as someone who easily can isolate the feeling of anger but has a difficult time identifying other emotions, this might help you. When my therapist and I discovered, and when he helped me discover, that thinking wasn't feeling, I was blown away. And I thought, wow, I'm very much in my head, and I'm thinking, and very reactive to the external environment, because I had been taught that what was happening inside of me was irrelevant. So I thought, okay, well, I have to reverse engineer this. I have to get back in touch with me. I have to stop looking for a sense of self in the taking care of other people. I have to stop loving myself conditionally, because that's the way I grew up. I had to learn to love myself unconditionally. And this was tricky, because it was me reparenting myself. This was me giving myself the tools that my parents did not offer me. I didn't have a roadmap. I just knew what was wrong. And that is what my 12-week breakthrough coaching program is all about. In my 12-week breakthrough coaching program, it's actually a roadmap that I created to help people like me who were struggling with many of these experiences and not being able to identify emotions, being reactive to other people, being hypervigilant, seeking approval from other people, not feeling good enough, loving myself conditionally, ending up with people who were very narcissistic, who took advantage and exploited my need to be needed, and learning to satisfy myself in a way that I had not been satisfied in childhood. It was very tricky, but it is possible to do. So one of the things that you can start working with right now, if you struggle with this, is get yourself a thesaurus. It is amazing to pick out a word and then to look it up in a thesaurus, and you will find an entire list of other words to help you identify one word. For instance, I'm going to type in the word anger, and what comes up is annoyance, vexation, exasperation, crossness, irritation, irritability, indignation, displeasure, resentment, fury, wrath, outrage, temper, testiness, tetchiness, ill humor, dyspepsia, waspishness. There are so many words that you can use to help you describe the word anger. Now, if you do this over time, what will begin to happen is your vocabulary becomes very flavorful. And suddenly you're not just feeling anger. You're like, well, am I really angry right now? Or am I really sad right now? Am I sad right now? Or am I really disappointed right now? Am I really unhappy right now? Or am I mildly irritated right now? Very, very important for us to develop a very flavorful and very full, fragrant vocabulary to help us identify how we're feeling. And I promise you that if you work on this, your life must change, because you want to be able to be someone who can express what you truly feel. When you can identify what you feel, you enhance the relationship you have with yourself. So if I know that I'm unhappy, or if I know that I'm grieving, then I can take care of myself. I can say, I'm grieving, I'm sad, just like everybody else at this loss, and I need to take care of me. And after I take care of me, then I can help take care of someone else. But I need to take care of me now, because I'm grieving. Another thing that you can do is, I call it my 1-2-3 process. So whatever's going on in life, and especially when you're experiencing a strong energy or strong emotion, you use the 1-2-3 process. So you ask yourself how you feel. How do I feel? It doesn't matter if it's angry, rageful, jealous, sad, depressed, whatever it is, accept how you feel. That's step number one. Step number two is feel it in your body. Well, if you're sad, how did your body tell you were sad? Because whenever you have an emotion, there's a chemical physiological response. So you want to figure out, well, how did my body tell me that I was sad? For me, when I get sad, my heart space begins to close. I can actually feel it get tight. And when you get really good at identifying your emotions, and you get really good at attuning yourself to you, what you will notice is that you're much more aware of what's happening in your heart space. It's incredible. The third step is, this is the money step. This is where you need to make a decision. But before you can make a decision about how you feel, you have to ask yourself three questions. What about this can't I control? What about this can I control? Number three, ultimately, how do I want to feel? So this is a future thought process. Those of us who struggle with anxiety and depression, we're so wrought with anxiety in the now, we're not thinking about the future. It's all about now, the fear in the now. And we've got to kick ourselves out of that pattern and start thinking about the future. So the third step is designed to help you think about the future. Well, how do you want to feel? So let's say I have an argument with someone that I really love, and I'm really upset about it. The first thing that I have to do is, how do I feel? I feel upset, I feel anxious, I feel sad. What if she never talks to me again? What if she doesn't want to be my friend anymore? Fear, fear, fear. I have to accept how I feel. The second step is, how do I feel it in my body? Well, my heart space is closing, my ears are getting hot, my heart is beating really fast, my hands are starting to sweat, I'm feeling very panicky, and my head feels like it's full of cotton. Okay, great. Now I know that when I feel sad or upset or frustrated, that's the way my body responds. Awesome information. So now I've got the mind-body connection going on. I can feel it. I'm connecting. Third step, what can't I control? What I can't control, that we already had this argument. I can't even control that this is the way I feel. This is the way I feel right now in this moment. Well, what can I control? I can control how much time I spend thinking about this. I can control how much time I spend trying to chase her approval. I can control whether or not I apologize. And if I decide that I am needing to apologize, I will. And so that becomes part of the decision-making process. The third step is, well, how do I want to feel? I want to feel at ease. I want to feel peaceful. Well, what decision can I make that will net me the most peace? So if I decide that I was in the wrong, I might want to apologize. If I decide I was not in the wrong and this boundary needed to be set, I might leave it alone. And I might go to yoga, or I might meditate, or I might journal, or I might pray about it. I'm going to do something that's going to allow me to accept and surrender to the situation so that I can live in peace. So these are some of the things that we can do to help us identify our emotions in a healthier way. And I truly, truly hope this has been helpful. Namaste, everybody. Until next time. Bye for now. You are enough.